This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. I'm so excited for today's guest. We've got Brendan Augmanson back by popular demand. Brendan, of course, is the chief economist at the British Columbia Real Estate Association and past guest fan favorite on our show. And what a time to have him on. We've got the beginning of the fall market. We're in the first week of September. Very interesting time in the real estate market.
Brendan was just recognized as one of the leading authorities on real estate in the entire country, Adam. So it's great to have Brendan back on the show. He is a true influencer now, so to speak. And what a time to have him. We're talking about what's happened this year, what's transpired, how the summer has went market-wise, and what is in store for the fall market. It's a great conversation. And as always, so many insights, so many takeaways. Really exciting to have Brendan back on the show.
You know, I feel like this is a very candid conversation, and he always comes armed with stats. And again, we talk tariffs, inflation, we talk about rate cuts, we talk about looking at actual stats, what's happening month over month here. What does he think is going to happen with the second half of 2025 and even 2026? Lots of things to cover, Matt. But before we get to that, of course, we have our segment that remains nameless.
Adam, this week's quiz question was ripped from the headlines. This is straight from the August 2025 stats that you can get if you sign up to the live wire, by the way, at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. But here's the question. Which type of home saw sales increase this August compared to last year? Detached homes or apartments?
Ooh, I think I have the answer on that.
But before we get to the answer, Adam, we have the Zonda Dealmakers event.
Oh man, super exciting.
If you're in the real estate sector here in Vancouver, Adam, you're going to want to hear this. Vancouver Dealmakers is happening Tuesday, September 16th at the Fairmont Waterfront.
Yeah, Matt, this brand new event brings together the region's top residential housing developers, builders, and capital experts to really break down what's really moving in the market, where the deals are happening, and what to expect heading into not only the fall, but 2026.
Adam, I said it before and I'll say it again. This is where you want to see and be seen. You're going to hear at this event from people like Neil Crystal, the president and CEO of Polygon Homes, Bo Jarvis, president and CEO of West Group, Cyrus Navabi, president of Qualex Landmark, Jordan Carlson, a recent addition, recently on our show as well. Jordan Carlson, Executive Vice President at Anthem Properties Group and President at Anthem's Holdings Canada, as well as CBRE, Nickel Real Estate, CIBC, and a host of other fantastic presenters.
Yeah, Matt, expect a morning packed with market insights, strategic conversations, and networking opportunities that you won't find anywhere else. This is also a new thing. But you get CPD points, which builders will know what that means. But builders in BC are required to earn 20 CPD, continuing professional development points, annually to renew their license. BC Housing has just approved the Dealmakers event for 1.5 hours of training under the financial planning category.
Vancouver Real Estate Podcast listeners can save 25% off this event still, Adam, by using the promo code VREP25. So head over to dealmakers.builderonline.com/events/Vancouver to get all the details and registered, or just Google Vancouver Dealmakers Builder Magazine. Make sure to use the promo code VREP25 or VREP25.
And now, Matt, back to our trivia question. I think that was like a slow pitch because I'm going to have to say detached.
You're going to say detached. Adam, it was a bit of a slow pitch. You are right. Here is the answer. Detached homes saw sales increase by 13%, which is striking. So detached homes are up this August compared to last August. Well, apartment sales actually are down almost 6%. So you're right again. Man, I feel like you're batting kind of, what would you say, 85% right now?
You know, it's interesting, but I think you're dumbing these down for me.
One thing's for sure, you have trouble with the more complicated ones.
All right. Well, hey, without further ado, why don't we cut to this conversation with our good friend, Brendan Ogmanson.
This is, not complicated. This is a fascinating conversation with Brendan. So enjoy. Mark your calendar.
That's right, Matt, because Atlin's grand opening is happening Saturday, September 13th from 12 to 5 p.m. at Zentera Sales Gallery in South Surrey at 2411 160th Street.
Join us for refreshments, food, and live entertainment. And Adam, the Beat 94.5 is going to be live on location.
Atlin is Zentera's newest condo community coming to West Clayton and features studio to three-bedroom homes, starting from just $325,000 and only a 10-minute walk to the new SkyTrain station.
Buy now and get over $50,000 in inclusions. Air conditioning, vinyl flooring upgrade, built-in closet organizers, Samsung appliances with a gas range, washer, dryer, storage locker, and more.
Atlin offers amazing amenities with over 30,000 square feet of outdoor space, including three children's playgrounds, plus a rooftop patio, a gym, co-working space, party room, games room, and even an on-site daycare with priority access for residents.
Just 10% down secures your home with move-in in 2028.
Come down to the Presentation Center on Saturday, September 13th to tour the sales gallery and show home to see what all the hype is about with your chance to secure your own home at Atlin.
Visit atlincondos.ca for more details. That's atlincondos.ca for more details.
Okay, so we're here with Brendan Ogmanson. He is the chief economist at the British Columbia Real Estate Association. Of course, past guest fan favorite. I think you're almost at your seven timer jacket, the gold jacket that we hand out. You've been on a number of times.
Yeah, I'm still waiting patiently by the door for my jacket.
You promised a six timer and it hasn't been delivered yet. So
with like a Starbucks card or something.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time and thanks again for making the time for us.
Always a pleasure. Happy to do it.
So, Brendan, maybe for listeners who haven't heard you on the show before, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am the chief economist for the BC Real Estate Association. We are an industry association that represents realtors. So we do everything from education of realtors, taking courses and whatnot, to advocacy, where our people talk to government about policies that will help the real estate sector. And what I do is run our economics department. And we do everything from reporting on monthly stats to like original research, kind of like think tank type original research, quantitative stuff, as well as all kinds of things, forecasts and whatnot.
Just before we get into this, Brendan, your star is rising. I don't want to list the recent accolades, but you're an influencer now.
Sure, yeah. Well, it's funny. Am I an influencer? Because dropped from Business in Vancouver's 500 most influential business leaders in BC. Fair enough. Not a business leader, but not included. But also good company. I think Tom Davidoff was also dropped. They kind of revamped their whole system this year. And I guess we didn't make the cut. No longer influential. But then Buzz Digital said I was one of the most influential people in real estate in Canada. So maybe we need to start boycotting Business in Vancouver. I'm just joking. All these things are ridiculous. The cool thing about the only cool thing really about the Buzz Digital thing was it shows how cool our community is. Like I put that on LinkedIn, got so many nice comments from, you know, people I know in real estate and the mortgage sector, everything else. That was the coolest part about it was just like, you know, hearing from a lot of people. It's a ridiculous, like these lists are really dumb. If I wasn't on the list, I would be upset. But I also then will say, what a stupid idea.
Meaningless. Totally meaningless.
But it was very cool, like all the support. We have a very like supportive generally community, and that was really cool to see. That was nice.
Nice. Well, maybe as a starting off launching point here, Brendan, how's the market right now?
Man, the last time I was on, I think it was in March, and that was probably some real doom and gloom. First 6 months were really not great all across BC. I was feeling more optimistic when the like July numbers came in, especially because like Metro Vancouver has been the one market that was really lagging all year. And we're starting to see some signs of life in like the Fraser Valley, you know, real estate board region and the Greater Vancouver Realtor region in June and July. And then we got to August, and the August numbers were not great. So I'm hoping it's kind of a blip. Vancouver was up maybe a little bit month over month. I know they are up year over year, you know, or like 3% or something, but that's comparing to a really bad August 2024. So not a real cause for celebration. Fraser Valley's running at one of its weakest years in like 25 years. They're struggling to even generate about 1,000 sales a month, which is really, really weak. And at a time when other markets in Canada, like similar markets like Toronto is rebounding in terms of sales, is rebounding pretty strongly. So I'm not really sure what's holding back the lower mainland specifically. We saw some of this in August too. August may have been a weird month. Victoria, which had been very strong, was a little bit weaker in August. Some other markets were okay, but I was hoping for some signs of recovery towards the end of the summer. Maybe it's just kind of a one-off weak month. We're back on that path in September, but so far, not necessarily the second half recovery or start to a second half recovery that I was hoping for.
And when you talk about August, can you just provide some context? So is this a weak August for August? Because like it typically, you know, in the real estate market, we talk about August being a pretty sleepy month, right?
Sure.
It's hot. Yeah. We had a very hot August this year. Obviously, the kids are off home from school. People are focused on vacation. Is this slow for August or slow compared to the rest of the year?
Yeah, so August, obviously, there's always the dip until about October when things pick up again. So August is always slow. This was slow for August. Like, it was a slow, I don't know what it ranks in the last 10 years. I think in Vancouver, I think it was something like the fourth slowest August in the past 10 years. So not the worst, but certainly a pretty slow month. And it just means we're tracking sales for this year in the Vancouver region at like, I don't know, 23,000-24,000 sales, which is like another year. Was that makes, I think, three straight years of like, you know, around 25,000 sales, which is just way, way below what we normally would be doing, which is like 31,000-32,000 sales is kind of the average. So obviously there's no real average year in Vancouver anymore. It's either kind of all the way up or all the way down, it seems, but we're still about 24% below the 10-year average in August, which is, we had been coming back. Now this is a bit of a step back for the market.
Do you see, I mean, you mentioned August potentially as an anomaly. I guess another way to frame it would be we're in an incredibly slow year and July was the anomaly. Is that potentially what we're seeing play out? And I hope not, but is that potentially what we're seeing?
I guess I would have thought that it was just taking the lower mainland longer to catch up. So every other market in BC had been coming back to kind of normal levels of sales. You know, there's the kind of the period right after April when a lot of the kind of tariff, I remember Liberation Day and the kind of market reaction to that. And we can talk about like the bond market reaction since, but like what's been happening in the economy and financial markets and what happened, certainty and and how that translated to the housing market from that like April to summer period. We had an initial dip and then most markets kind of started to come back. It's just the Fraser Valley and Vancouver. It's not like they're still fall, like sales are up or flat. So it's like I thought we'd be coming off the bottom, I guess, a little bit faster, catching up to markets like, you know, Victoria or Toronto, similar markets that have had pretty decent rebounds. And for whatever reason, like the Metro Vancouver area just is not participating as strongly in that rebound.
Do you have any theories as to why? Because I mean, most of the kind of national media conversation, I think, and you know, we've had I'm thinking Ben Myers on the show from Toronto. The impression has always been their downturn has been more aggressive, more deep, and kind of just deeper, I guess, than Vancouver. But it sounds like now we're kind of the laggard. Do you have any kind of theories as to what's going on?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of separate, you know, whether or not we're talking about prices or we're talking about sales, and whether we're talking about the pre-sale or new market versus the resale market. So right. Toronto's pre-sale market is I think probably worse than ours. They have a lot more, you know, accumulation of inventory. So like their new home market's probably worse. Like what Ben Myers really, like his specialty, I think, is in selling new and or advising on newer projects. Prices in Toronto too, if you look at like a peak from the peak, apartment prices in Toronto are down like 20% from their all-time high, and that was set in like 2022. So prices have really come off in that market, whereas in Vancouver, they're down like 5 or 6% from their all-time high, and that peak was like 2024, I think. So prices in Vancouver just haven't come down as much as Toronto. So in terms of pricing, Toronto's much worse off than Vancouver. But for like volume, like unit sales, Vancouver is very, very slow. So maybe, and whereas Toronto's resale market has come back a lot faster. So that's where sort of the difference is. As far as why, really tough. I mean, the sort of thesis I had for the market overall was like we haven't really had like the tariff shock to the economy. Like it hasn't really necessarily impacted, you know, growth and jobs directly, right? We've had an uncertainty shock, which affects growth and jobs, but we haven't had like the actual enactment of tariffs that are really like punishing to different sectors and job losses and that kind of thing. We've had a lot of uncertainty, which causes a pullback in investment, a pullback in hiring, pullback in spending by households, and a pullback in things like buying a home, because you have to have a lot of confidence in the market to make a big decision like buying a home. So that we had that uncertainty shock, and as that faded, we did see a coinciding with that fading of uncertainty. And again, we talk about uncertainty as if it's a measurable thing, like it's kind of a vibe or mood. It's not, you know, I woke up this morning and my uncertainty was 1500, and now it's 600. Like if you look at like the uncertainty index, like those things, take those things with a grain of salt. But you know, a bunch of different measures, including like business confidence and outlooks and that kind of thing, showed there was a real drop in confidence or a real rise in uncertainty during the spring, and a coincident decline in home sales, decline in business investment and that kind of thing. As that uncertainty fades, because we haven't had as much discussion or like, you know, there hasn't been as many headlines in the news about fears of a recession due to tariffs and that kind of thing as there was in the first quarter of this year. As that's faded, we saw markets coming back, and we even, you know, we saw things bottom out, at least in Metro Vancouver, if not really rebound. Maybe it's just the affordability that's still constraining those markets. Like there's, you know, it's the tough thing is though that we were at pretty decent level of sales at the end of last year with the same affordability, or even worse because the rates are a bit lower now. So it's really hard to point to like that being the cause. So it's, I don't know. We don't have a lot of investors in the market right now. We don't have a lot of like people buying condos to rent out because the rental market is looking pretty soft. So perhaps that's, you know, without investors kind of adding a little bit of a boost to home sales. Maybe that's part of the equation. It's tough. My friend Andrew Liss at Vancouver's been puzzling over this. I think it's occupying a lot of brain space for him, because like it's a really tough question. Like, why is it that these markets aren't coming back? Right. There's no obvious factor to point to, because you know rates are coming down, other markets are up. It's complicated.
And so at one point there, it seemed like you were going to point to pricing, like that pricing needs to come off.
I mean, that would help, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if prices came down, if sellers capitulated and they don't have to, and it's part of like, we don't need, sellers are like, I'm fine, I don't need to sell. Then yeah, if prices were lower, we'd see higher sales, just kind of almost mechanically, because the demand is there. It just like pointed to like affordability is the reason why we haven't seen things come back. It's difficult simply because why were we at normal levels of sales in right, you know, October, November, December of 2024 with the same affordability? And you know, the only thing that's really changed is the uncertainty. right? That's the only factor that's really shown up just in 2025 and that's disrupted the market. So, it, you know, and again, that's a really hard thing to measure.
Has affordability improved more so in Toronto than in Vancouver?
Well, I guess for certain segments, right? If prices are down 20% from their peak on an apartment and rates are down, then yeah, affordability would be a little bit better. I haven't done the like a direct affordability comparison, but you know, prices are certainly down in Toronto compared to Vancouver.
So I guess just thinking about this, if we can't kind of isolate or point to reasons why Vancouver is underperforming, mm-hmm. can we point to what's going to bring us out of the funk? You know, is it like the regular kind of like interest rates coming down or whatever? But what brings us out of it, I guess?
Yeah, I think the recipe for like a better, you know, second half or hopefully a better 2026, and some of this might just be like eliminate the things that we think are causing the market to be where it's at. So one, we need some certainty about the outlook for the economy. So that means something that definitively ends all of the speculation about tariffs and the effects that tariffs might have on growth and inflation. So getting rid of that discussion completely, whether that's a new free trade agreement that gets worked out in the next year, whether that's some other, you know, Trump comes to his senses about tariffs, probably low probability there, but some definitive end to that discussion so that it's not front of mind for businesses and households. Second, and kind of related to the uncertainty part, is getting the economy growing at least back to kind of trend growth. We're measuring growth in the BC economy still at like 1 to 1.5% for the second year in a row. Good, you know, average growth in the BC economy is closer to like 2.5%. So, you know, we need the economy to kind of to pick up so that we can, you know, jobs will pick up and everything else. Wages will grow. That'll support the housing market. And then we probably need a little bit of stimulus from the Bank of Canada. So they're at 2.75%. You know, most financial markets have about a slightly higher than 50% chance they're going to cut in September. It's not like 25 basis points is going to make that big of a difference, except maybe it changes some expectations about the economy or about where mortgage rates are headed or where, you know, generally interest rates are headed. And that means maybe a shift in expectations that causes, you know, 5-year fixed rates to come down a little bit as well, because they've been creeping a little bit higher in the last couple months. So just a generally like, end to uncertainty, growth picking up, and maybe rates coming down a bit. If those three things happen and the market is still not back to kind of a normal level of sales activity, then I'm stumped.
Then I'm moving to Calgary.
Sure. I might just hang up. I'll hang up my economist license and yeah.
Are there areas in Metro Vancouver or the province that have surprised you, like either as laggers or as outperformers?
Yeah, the three big ones, like the island has been pretty strong. So outside of Victoria, you know, Victoria was had a very strong start to this year as well. They had kind of a more difficult August, but up to that point had been outperforming. The island outside of Victoria has been basically normal. I've talked about the Kootenay too many times on this podcast. Let's be by that. Their market has just been going along like nothing has happened. Maybe that says something about the Kootenay and their general kind of isolation from the rest of the world. I don't know, but it seems like no news has penetrated the Kootenay. Their just sales are just going along at the 10-year average or slightly above. And then the North is also outperforming. So I joke about the Kootenay, but really the story of the Kootenay in the North is really about affordability there. Like, you know, sure there's uncertainty, but buying a home or buying a condo or whatever in the North or in the Kootenay is not as big a financial decision as it is in Vancouver, right? So the uncertainty around it, the financial uncertainty, you know, tied to it is not nearly as strong. We've seen a pretty strong correlation between like what markets really suffered, you know, when the uncertainty shock hit is pretty strongly correlated with price, right? You know, it's a big financial decision to buy even an apartment in Vancouver. And so, you know, the bigger, the more kind of weightier that decision is, the more it's going to be affected by uncertainty.
Can we maybe go back to interest rates? Because, you know, you mentioned so uncertainty, the economy, and then stimulus or interest rates declining. I feel like there's these, it might even be worth kind of a general summary of where we're at, right? Because the bond market has been acting strange, I think, this year. You know, what the relationship is with the Bank of Canada and the US, thinking of, you know, if Jerome Powell is around or what's going on there. They're talking about a full point being cut at the Fed over the next 6 to 12 months or whatever it is. Like, can you give us a general outline of the complexities of the interest rate environment and where you see it heading in the next 6 to 12 months?
Yeah. So Bank of Canada right now is at 2.75, which is the midpoint of what they consider as neutral for the Canadian economy, which means it's not going to, you know, stimulate the economy one way or the other. It's neutral. It's what, you know, what rate is consistent with their inflation target being, or their inflation being at target over the medium term. That's kind of the way they think about it. Their neutral rates are around like 3, and they're still, what are they at, 4? Are they at 5 or 4.75? I can never remember. They have that range, so I always get tripped up. But they're still well above neutral. So they're, the Bank of Canada is kind of at neutral. Bank of Canada, the Fed is still like in kind of tightening, but like it's restrictive. Yeah, the stance of Montreal is still quite restrictive. But their inflation is also running above 3%, right? So that, you know, they're just kind of following what a typical kind of rule for setting interest rates would tell you where rates should be. There's like, there's the Trump rule, which, you know, says that rate should be at 1%. That hard to get that from any standard macroeconomic model, but you know, he's playing with a different set of models, I guess. So what complicates the Bank of Canada's decisions or has up to this point is the tariff question and how much tariffs were going to affect the economy. So back when I was on the show before, me and everyone else that does this kind of work was trying to figure out what the ultimate impact of tariffs was going to be. Were we going to have like a 25% tariff on all Canadian imports to the United States? You know, that would have been obviously very severe. If we retaliated, it was going to have huge inflationary impacts as well. So you saw modeling for the Bank of Canada at the time that said if we had kind of a worst case scenario, that we'd be in a recession for a year with inflation above 3%. So your typical kind of stagflation. Monetary policy in stagflation is really tough because they're mandated to keep inflation at 2%. So that's a very complicated situation. Where we're at now is almost all Canadian exports to the United States are still covered by our free trade agreement. So even though there's headlines, 35% tariff on Canada, that, you know, Trump sent his letters out to every country and we're going to have a 35% tariff, the fine print on that is, well, everything's actually still covered by CUSMA. And so the effective tariff on imports into the United States from Canada is like 5%. So not really that significant. Significant for some sectors. Forestry is going to get hit hard, aluminum, steel. But most goods that we're shipping are not tariffed at all. We essentially still just cover it as under the free trade agreement. On the inflation side, Canada's effective tariff on U.S. imports into Canada is only about 2%. So really, really low. And now it's going to be zero because they're ending retaliatory tariffs. So this makes the question of the Bank of Canada a lot less complicated. They don't really have to worry about the inflationary impacts on like retaliatory tariffs anymore because we're dropping them, which means inflation is probably going to undershoot its target. We're going to see core inflation coming down in the next few months. And the economy is pretty weak, or at least parts of the economy are weak. And that means they can respond to a weakening economy without having to worry about the inflationary effects of tariffs. So if the economy keeps getting weak and inflation starts trending lower, they can be more aggressive on the monetary policy front.
Do you have a best guess on when you think that actually happens, like when we start to see rates cut again?
Yeah, I think they're going to cut in September. If we get a jobs report this week that is similar to the one from July, that was, you know, showed really weak job numbers. If we get inflation data, you know, right before they meet to decide interest rates, that shows inflation is still coming down, core inflation especially is still coming down, then I think that gives them a lot of room to be confident that they can cut rates without, you know, sparking inflation back up. The important thing though is that's just like the short end of the yield curve, and all of the action on the longer end of the yield curve has been kind of the most fascinating. We had so much volatility with, you know, 5-year bond yields tend to drive 5-year fixed rates. And we've seen a pretty significant march upward in 5-year bond yields since April. Mostly, you know, maybe it's global investors losing faith in US dollar assets, which was a popular narrative for a while. maybe it's just a general normalization of yields. We've had a really weird looking yield curve for a while. So we need to get sort of a, you know, it's supposed to slope upwards. We're going to have a Bank of Canada that's around 2.5, and we should have a 5-year bond yield that's around 3. And that means probably a mortgage rate around 4.5, right? So that would be normal. Could be we're just getting back to normal on these things. So even if the Bank of Canada is cutting, we might not necessarily see a lot of relief from 5-year fixed rates, unless they really signal that they're planning to cut more, and then we can see 5-year bond yields come down.
So Brendan, just thinking about this, there's a potential where we see the Bank of Canada cutting, so variable rates are impacted, but with the bond rate being what it is, 5-year fixed are going to be sticky or potentially even up a bit. So maybe the Bank of Canada, that cutting doesn't have the impact that we all hope on the real estate market. And just because, you know, a lot of people that we've been working with over the last couple of years have been burned very badly in the variable rate with variable rate product, right? And in a world that seems, if anything, only more uncertain, it seems to take that bet, even if it's a way better rate, is tricky at the moment. But I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on kind of how that potentially plays out.
Yeah, so you think of like a 5-year bond yield is the combination of expectations about what the Bank of Canada is going to do over the next 5 years and like a risk premium. So the Bank of Canada can influence the expectations through communications. So if they come out in September and cut rates and they say, you know, the economy looks like it might need more stimulus in the future, that'll impact expectations now. And so maybe markets priced in a 2.5% overnight rate by the end of the year. Maybe now it's 2.25, maybe it's 2. And that causes 5-year bond yields to fall because of that expectations component, as long as the risk premium part stays kind of constant, right? So they can kind of influence 5-year bond yields lower, but that risk premium really depends on like global factors. And that's where I think we've seen a lot of the rise in bond yields over the past couple months has been just a riskier overall environment. It means that term premium or that risk premium is a little bit higher. It's kind of getting back to normal. But so we still could see 5-year fixed rates fall with a Bank of Canada cut if they communicate that maybe they're not done and they can really influence expectations lower.
It seems to me, Brendan, if I'm hearing everything correctly, the uncertainty index seems to be almost lower this going into the second half of the year than it was the first half of the year. We might be looking at some rate cuts coming up as early as September. Also, the tariff thing seems to be at least, you know, absorbed and people are getting past it. And that seems to be what really changed the trajectory of the market in the beginning of the year. At least a lot of people make that argument, right? That we were kind of felt like we were rebounding and then the tariffs were announced and we saw a softening. Does this point to a stronger second half of the year in the real estate market than the first half in your mind?
That was my thought. I certainly was more confident about it before I saw the August data, which doesn't show the kind of continued progress that I wanted to see. So yeah, never kind of reason from 1 month of data. So I'm kind of, wait to see what happens in September. But I think we'll have we had a very weak first half of the year. So having a stronger second half is a pretty low bar. But I think that we'll see things start to recover. When we did some modeling on this, I think it was in March or April, about some potential paths for the housing market. The one that looks the most likely now is like fading uncertainty and kind of status quo on the tariff front, which means no escalation. And under that scenario, we were back to above like average levels of sales by like the second quarter of 2026. So it's not a straight shot up, but I think we see like gradual progress month after month is really what we're looking for. And we're seeing it in most markets. Just the lower mainland tends to be lagging behind, again, for reasons we don't totally understand yet.
What about inventory, Brendan? Because we've seen, well, I'll let you speak to it, but generally, yeah, we've went from, 2023, early 2024, like we can't, there's no inventory, to this dramatic spike to levels that we haven't seen for years. is kind of new inventory petering out? Is it normalized? Is it actually a lot? Is it flooding the market? Like, where are we at with inventory? And what do you expect for the fall?
Active listings are like the highest they've been in more than a decade at what, around 16, 17,000 in Vancouver. Keeping in mind that over the past decade, we had extraordinarily low inventory. So whenever we say like, oh, it's a 10-year high for inventory, it's not like as alarming as maybe it sounds at first, because what happened over the past 10 years is a rapid acceleration of home prices due to really, really low inventory. So yeah, at like 16,000 is a little higher than what we consider like balanced if we had a market that was back to like normal levels of sales, but it's not that much higher, right? It would be, you know, it's you know, 500 to 1,000 listings above what we would consider like healthy for the long term. So active listings are okay. Once sales pick up, they'll start to come back down because new listings activity is pretty normal. The kind of wild card is on the new side, where there's like 4,000 unsold new units in Metro Vancouver. So if you like total inventory of units for sale, is actually quite a bit higher than what you would see just looking at active listings. There's, you know, close to like 20,000 total units available for sale, like that you could move into right now in Metro Vancouver. So inventory, including new, which is normally not, you know, usually they, you know, developers don't run with much inventory at all. Most of it's all sold. So the inventory is a bit higher, and some of that inventory is pretty like motivated to move is the other thing. Like, you know, you guys are in the industry, so I'm sure you get all like the incentives that are being offered by developers and everything else. So that's like some pretty motivated inventory that's competing with the resale market. So it you know, it adds an extra wrinkle, I think, to everything else that's happening in Vancouver.
And I guess it's anyone's guess as to how inventory, like presumably even with healthy sales volumes, we're still going to be elevated over the fall. But is there any indications? I mean, and we just, Labor Day was what, 2 days ago or yesterday, yeah, or whenever, yeah, whatever day we're on here. Is there any indication to how new inventory is going to play out in the fall?
It's a good question. I'm more convinced on like the act, on like the relist or like sort of the resale active listing side of things. As sales come back, as hopefully they will through the fall, that'll start to come down and probably would have peaked. Because again, like new listings aren't that high. It's really just slow sales that are keeping inventory at the levels they're at. It's not like we're seeing huge amount of new listings hit the market. So active listings are probably pretty stable. On the new side, and I'm not sure, you know, obviously, again, that's pretty motivated kind of inventory. Like, are those incentives going to work? Are there enough buyers in that market? You know, the prices are obviously higher than for resale. So I don't know. It's I'm hopeful, I guess, that market will come back as well. And we really need it to. We need that inventory to be drawn down so that we can continue to supply the market in the long term. Like the longer we have elevated levels of new inventory, the more like other projects get canceled or delayed. And that hurts our long-term supply situation. So, but yeah, I don't have as much insight on the dynamics of the new side of the market. We have terrible data for like new on the, like, it's very like, it's good, but it's closely held by developers. So it's really difficult to like get a really good idea of what's happening on like the pre-sale and the like new construction part of the market.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia,
serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who mm-hmm. happen to be licensed at Oakland, please reach out to us at oakland.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Maybe switching gears here a little bit, Brendan, I just thinking about, we've talked a little bit about performative real estate on this show and the markets, and it's been something we've been thinking a lot about lately in a world where I think a lot of people say they're economists and they might have, you know, economics 101.
Housing experts, Adam.
Housing experts. Thanks. But lots of people talking about the market. What are some takes you see in the mainstream media or by self-described experts that make you shake your head?
Boy, without naming names. One thing that really bugs me is, and not all media is guilty of this, but certain parts of the media are certainly guilty of it, and who they label experts and who they don't talk to, I think is says a lot. We're so, I hate to use the word blessed because it's so cheesy, but blessed in Vancouver with like one of the best ecosystems of real estate experts, I'd say in North America. If you look at like academics, we got, you know, Tom Davidoff, Sir Somerville, Nathaniel Lauster, Andre Pavlov at SFU. Got people like Jens von Bergman, who's basically an academic. You got the private sector, my friend Brian Yu, my friend Ryan Berlin at Rennie and his colleagues, Andrew Ramlow, Ryan Wise. You got stars like Wendy Waters. You got Andrew Liss at Vancouver. We have a lot of extraordinarily talented people looking at real estate. And were they asked to sign that letter? Right? From the 27 experts? Nope. Or if they did, they didn't sign it, which says a lot as well. I certainly wasn't asked. So for some reason, we have a lot of people in media who cherry pick the experts that will tell them what they want to hear or whatever their bias is. That seems to be, you know, and like I talk to the media a lot, so it's not always, but it's interesting what we label an expert and then who all the voices that we somehow don't listen to, even though, again, we have just an extreme wealth of experts in this area that whose voices aren't always being heard.
What do you think holds certain cohorts together and divides others? Like what is it? Is it a supply demand? Is that at the core of it still? Like that used to be, I feel like, the great debate, but where's the friction?
I think for obvious reasons, I think housing is just like a pretty emotional issue. I think when housing is difficult, everything in your life is difficult. And we have really difficult, really challenging housing in Vancouver and in BC. It's kind of spread all over. So some of it's kind of emotionally charged. There's a lot of like, at least on for some, it's like their career is basically being right about this topic. And, you know, they went through the past decade with a certain philosophy about what was driving home prices higher or what works in the housing market and what doesn't as far as design and planning. And it hasn't worked. So some of it, I think, is maybe it's reputation. Maybe it's, I don't know what, something, you know, a lot of it's not economics. So a lot of, I don't know if you, again, you look at that list of experts, there's no economists on that list, and no surprise, there's a lot of pretty elementary mistakes being made in their recommendations. So I don't know what causes that. I have absolutely no idea. It's very frustrating. It's frustrating that it gets taken seriously, but here we are.
But it's emotional. There's ego. There's a livelihood at stake.
Sure.
I feel like one thing that is. I don't know if this was always, I feel like this discussion around who a housing expert is feels kind of like a newer discussion, the one that we weren't talking about as much. And I think it's a useful one, right? And I feel like a lot of the, you know, Bo Jarvis was on the show talking about, you know, the federal government will convene a group of experts and no one from the development industry will be there. And like, it's, I think as a first stage, it's kind of interesting. Like just to point out the problem, right? And I feel like it's getting legs in kind of a useful way at the very least at this point.
Yeah, and yeah, I left out obviously people who actually build housing, like people like Bo Jarvis, and then you know experts in that area too, like Michael Ferreira and people like that. Like we have so many people who know what they're talking about, and it's frustrating their voices get ignored. So one of my good friend and colleague Trevor Hargreaves on the show. And one of the things he's been pounding the table on for years now is a roundtable of experts. Whenever you make policy, consult this roundtable. And we get pushback from the government saying, oh, we can't talk to hundreds of people every time we want to make sleep. No one's saying that. We just have actual experts that you can consult on call. The table, I keep my joke is the table doesn't even have to be round. It can be square. It can be whatever shape you want. But, you know, just have experts at the table. And have a conversation about it. You can have differing views even, as long as you're consulting people who actually know what they're talking about.
The feedback, by the way, the feedback that we got from Trevor's episode was overwhelmingly positive that, you know, that these ideas, like people just shaking their heads that they can't believe that ideas like this aren't being actually taken on.
Yeah, he's done incredible work. I mean, he's what's the word? I'm not going to indefatigable. Is that how you pronounce that? In his pursuit.
Indefatigable, I think.
It's impossible, right? I don't know why I tried. But he is he's relentless. Let's say relentless in his pursuit of some of these policy ideas. I've seen him pitch it over and over again, and he's doing great work.
Brendan, you know, just thinking about the rest of this year, I feel like when we asked you back on, we want the unvarnished truth, and we're getting it. So thank you, but it's more negative than I was hoping. I was hoping that you'd come on and be like, oh my God, we're...
If this was the Kootenai Real Estate Podcast, I'd be super optimistic.
We're actually launching that. but is there positive signs for the market? And I feel like we've been talking about the bottom for the last number of years now. When was the bottom? Is the bottom in? I feel like you can't get much worse than March, April, May of 2025. But we were talking about the bottom in 2024 and even in 2023. So positive signs, and where are we at in this market cycle?
Yeah, so I think if I go back to kind of the scenarios that we had put together in spring, I think we've avoided, hopefully, again, the difficulty is when the entire direction of policy can change with one all caps social media post. It's very difficult to be certain about anything. But it seems like we've avoided the worst case scenario that we were all, you know, really concerned about in the first quarter of this year, right? We're not going to have a year-long recession with 3% inflation, most likely. We'd have to see, you know, tariffs applied to all Canadian goods for that to happen. So avoided the worst case scenario. That alone is a win, because there was a real danger that we'd have a much different outlook over the next year. I think we're probably going to have kind of a status quo. We had a really weird first half of this year because all kind of economic behavior has been distorted by tariffs. We had a really strong first quarter in Canada and a pullback in the second quarter, you know, because U.S. firms were buying a whole bunch of Canadian goods in the first quarter and then didn't obviously need to in the second quarter. They're stocking inventory. So all that behavior has just distorted a lot of any kind of signal that we might get from the direction of the economy. From here, I wouldn't be surprised if in the third quarter, you know, the Canadian economy is kind of getting back to normal. Maybe rates are down a little bit. A lot of the fear that was in the that really clouded the entire first half of this year is dissipating, and things can get back to normal, and people can feel confident about getting back into the market without being blindsided by things like, you know, tariffs causing them to lose their job. So that's the positive part, is I think we've managed to skirt the worst case scenario that was really staring us in the face in like April. Where we go from here, it's really hard to see sales trawling along where they're at right now in an area like Metro Vancouver, so, you know, Fraser Valley and Greater Vancouver Real Estate Board, given like how much demographic demand there is. And like demographics tend to win over the long term. And there's just a lot of young people who need homes still. So affordability is going to be a struggle, but that demand is there. So we're not going to stay at these levels forever. We should have been back to normal levels of sales this year and would have been, I think, without this disruption from tariffs. So I'm pretty confident we're going to be back there. Is it going to take a few months still? And is it more of a 2026 kind of where we're getting, you know, kind of getting back to 10-year averages of sales? Maybe it's going to take that long, but I think we've seen the worst and we've avoided the absolute worst case scenario.
Maybe as a final question, Brendan, before we move on to the five wire, headline for 2025.
And 2026. Throw in 2026, because we only got a couple months left in 2025.
Yeah. The headline for today. I always get asked these headline questions. I was asked this at a UDI panel not long ago, and there's like, Wendy Waters was the moderator, and she's like, one word for this. I'm like, and I gave her like 48 words of jumble. So always a bad question to ask me. My first slide for describing in my presentation I'll be doing for the fall See, I'm already on like word 15. This is not going to fit on a headline. But my first slide in my presentation deck, in my presentation deck for fall 2025 is the line from Princess Bride, the, oh, where were we? Oh, yes, the pit of despair. So that pit of despair is the headline for first half of 2025. And hopefully, I don't know what how you get out of the pit of despair, but hopefully the second half we're kind of climbing out of that and getting back to normal. And hopefully 2026 is just like, hey, this is normal. This is okay. Is that a good headline? I couldn't That's write a headline. I'd be the worst headline writer in the world.
I'll take
normal. Where were we? The pit of despair. Getting back to normal.
Getting back to normal. There you go. out of the pit of despair and back out to normal.
Yeah, okay. First Princess Bride reference on our show too.
I feel like that is like there's so few shared like culture anymore, but I feel like Princess Bride is still one that most people know and like, regardless of generation. I don't know. Because I've talked to people in their 60s that love The Princess Bride. I love Princess Bride. That's a great movie. I showed it to my kids.
Oh, your kids do too. Oh, interesting. I was going to say that might have stopped at everyone on this call's generation.
Like, Matt, has your daughter seen Princess Bride?
She hasn't, but...
Oh, great.
Yeah, but maybe soon. It's hard for me to... We were talking about this before we went live. My daughter's 13.
Book some time and see if she's available. It's
like, A, book some time, and B, anything that I like is potentially not going to go over. So I'll have to say, like, this is something I hate. Don't watch this.
There's a great... I think it's Tina Fey talking about dealing with teenagers and how, like... Parents dealing with teenagers are if you have like a crush on a boy or a girl, like, oh, they said they might come to dinner later. Like, you know, like excited about like the prospect. Oh, they spoke to me in the kitchen today.
Oh God, that's funny. I never heard that, but very accurate. Very accurate. Well, we do have this segment called The Five Wire, Brendan. You're quite familiar with it. I think you're one of our true fan favorites for The Five Wire. Do you have time to stick around for that?
I would love, it's the only reason I do the podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Jethro Condos in downtown Langley. Over 100 homes under $425,000 with one-bedroom suites starting at $399,900.
Here's what's incredible, Adam. These condos actually cash flow. When's the last time we could say that about new construction in the Lower Mainland? With these entry-level prices, the numbers actually work for investors.
And you're in the heart of downtown Langley, surrounded by trendy cafes, artisan bakeries, and parks. The area is experiencing incredible growth and new development.
Yeah, the location is absolutely key. Jethro is steps from the future Langley SkyTrain station. Get in before that transit connection transforms the area. Because once that SkyTrain arrives, you're looking at direct connections across the Lower Mainland.
Jethro is a Whitetail Homes project. Whitetail Homes has over 25 years of experience with quality construction and finishes that exceed expectations. We're talking vibrant interiors, expansive windows, and thoughtful design.
For realtors listening, they are offering amazing cooperative incentives. This is a rare opportunity where the fundamentals make sense. Affordable entry, cash flow potential, and positioned for major transit infrastructure in all around win.
Register at jethrocondos.ca. That's JETHRO condos.ca.
Jethro Condos, distinctly Langley, uniquely yours.
Question number one. One book that you've read recently that you would recommend.
So I read a stack every summer. The one that I liked the most that I read this summer was The Making of the Atomic Bomb, which is, it's about 800 pages. And you don't even get to the Manhattan Project till about page 400, I think, because it goes through every single development in science, like chemistry and physics, and some in culture and world history that led up to the making of the atomic bomb. So it's absolutely fascinating. It's an incredible work of history. So I would recommend that if you set aside time to read 800 pages about... And I had to like have ChatGPT on hand because like my physics is pretty rusty and there's a lot of like pretty technical discussion about things that I have no idea. But YouTube is great, and ChatGPT will tell you what they're talking about some of the time. So that was great. That was really good. And I'm just finishing up, or no, I just finished Corporate. Is it Corporate Rock Sucks? The History of SST Records. So that was also really, really interesting.
Here's a question for you, Brendan, because I saw your stack. Martin Amis seemed to be a big player on there. More than one book, if I recall. What was the...
I read Zone of Interest and Time's Arrow. The song.
Is it? How did you come up with Martin Amis? Was it just that you had those books in mind, the stuff you want to read? Or
I think every one of his books. So I went through a phase in my early 20s, I guess, where I got really interested in a group of British writers. So there's a group of friends: Christopher Hitchens, Martin Amis, Salman Rushdie, Ian McEwan, and read all of their stuff. Not all of Salman Rushdie stuff, but four or five Salman Rushdie. Yeah.
What about, not to go too deep into this, but what do you think of Christopher Hitchens' memoir? Did you read that?
Read a long time ago.
I can't remember what it's called either, but that was a...
It's called, is that Hitch 22?
Yeah.
Loved it. I loved all of his writing.
Yeah, that was, I feel like I've read that maybe twice. And that is,
Letters to a Young Contrarian, I think, is his best. And actually, like, just mining some of that for just references of things to read. Like, I've gotten so many, I read so many things just off of offshoots of recommendations from stuff that he would write, because he had obviously such a, you know, network of references in his head.
Yeah. He's the one guy that, and maybe this was part of the lore more than. But I don't think so. He'd go out and have like a night, you know, drink all night long. And then he'd put together an article in like an hour and a half at 9 a.m. or something.
Yeah. There's like stories of him like doing that, like at the table at like dinner after he's had like 2 bottles of wine. Yeah. And it's phenomenal with like no edits necessary. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, some people are literally no edits. People are superhuman. I don't know. I don't have that gene.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Hitch and the Ride podcast. just kidding. All right. Number two, Matt.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's me. Well, we've had you on recently. So since you've been on, do you have a new belief, behavior, or habit that has improved your life?
So my wife, who's a nurse, she had been working in public health, and there's like a 9-to-5 job. And now she works shift work again. So 12-hour shifts. So she'll, you know, could be on the weekend, 8 to 8 or whatever it is. So I've started just going to the movies by myself. And I love movies. I love going to the movies. I actually kind of prefer going to the movies by myself. I'll invite my kids every once in a while, and they're like, I'll get a maybe. If I get a maybe, I'm like, ooh, that's exciting. But yeah, so I just go to the movies. So I've seen a bunch. Most recent one I saw was Weapons. When I saw Weapons, that was fantastic. If you like horror movies. But yeah, I've seen a whole bunch of movies. It's just a nice, just like, you know, take myself to the movies. It's been great.
Nice. Best movie of the summer?
Oh, man. It might be that I saw, it might be Weapons. I saw, because like Sinners was really good, but that came out before the summer. I liked F1. F1 was really fun. It's kind of dumb, but it's fun. Yeah, but I really enjoyed Weapons.
There's some new new movie with The Rock that's getting a lot of accolades.
Smashing Machine. That looks great. That's really a Benny Safdie directed movie. Yeah, that looks really good.
Nice. Yeah, what have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation? Did you just kind of ask that, Matt? Or?
Yeah, I feel... Well, yeah, I did. Not on purpose.
I've got a great answer, though, is another fellow past guest fan favorite, Dustin Woodhouse, recommended to me the show Patriot from Amazon. It came out like 2014 or 15, I think. I knew about it, hadn't watched it. I've watched it through twice. It's only like 18 episodes because they canceled it the second season. But I've watched it through. I watched it while working out, and then I watched it. I made my wife watch it. So I've watched it twice in the past 6 months, I think. It's phenomenal. I love it. It's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Wow. What? Patriot.
Yeah, it's about a severely depressed CIA assassin. It mostly takes place in Europe. It's incredible.
91% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm in.
There you go.
Wow, that's a great one. Okay. I thought you were going to say Mobland, but...
Mobland was really good too. I did like Mobland. I enjoyed Mobland a lot. I just watched the, I watch a whole lot of TV because my lifting four times a week, and then I watch TV while I do it at my house. I just got through the last season of Dexter. I guess it's almost done, which is fun. Stupid, but it's fun. And Alien Earth. That's a good one.
Alien
Earth. Three episodes into that. That's been really good. Huh. Yeah, it's like the Aliens franchise, but takes place 2 years before the first movie.
Oh, wow. That's a prequel.
Yeah, it's really good.
Before we went live here, Brendan, you already said that you've went to Wilco twice in the last week, but what music are you listening to these days that everyone should get behind?
Yeah, like there's I read a review in Pitchfork of a Vancouver punk band. They got a really good review. They're called Water Margin. That's a really good record. I can't remember the record's called, but Water Margin, Vancouver punk kind of indie rock band. That's really good. What else am I listening to? Oh, I guess because I was reading that SST Records book, I was just going back and listening to like Black Flag and Saccharin Trust and the Meat Puppets and stuff like that. Old like 80s, you know, seminal hardcore and Husker Du, that kind of stuff.
I was just talking to two friends who were at that Wilco show in Vancouver, and they were talking about Nels Klein and what an incredible guitar player he is.
Was that their first experience with Nels Klein? So. He did about a 6-minute solo that was like face melting. It was incredible. Yeah, he's a virtuoso. It's pretty ridiculous. I'm not a big fan of like jam bands or virtuosity or like, so like Wilco every once in a while will dip into like Grateful Dead kind of smashing into Steely Dan. I'm like, this is not what I want, because
it's not for me.
Yeah, but yeah, they do it extraordinarily well. They don't always do it, so it's still like they'll still have like their, so obviously they started as like, you know, if you go way back, sounded more like the Replacements or like, you know, and then like alt country kind of stuff, and then indie rock stuff like Yankee Hell Foxtrot and A Ghost Is Born. But then they got in their dad rock phase, and yeah, there's some noodling. It's not my favorite. It's amazing, but I'm like this song didn't need to be 9 minutes of jamming. But it is great. It was a great show.
Hey, something that you've purchased for under $1,500 that's changed your life or had a positive impact on your life in the last few years?
So we did a bit of a backyard renovation this year and got a pergola. Pergolas are very expensive for some reason, and they jump in price. Like you go up like an extra square foot and it jumps like $1,000 in price. That, you know, the pergola was not under $1,500, or maybe it was, but my recommendation, the thing I spent money on, though, is paying to have someone else assemble it is life-changing. Two guys showed up, it was done in like 2 hours, maybe less, and then done. No threats of divorce, no like, why isn't it done yet? Like, I don't know if you've ever tried to, like, I saw my father-in-law had put up a pergola. It took like three guys, and it took them all day. And it's like, I don't want to, I'll pay. It's not cheap. I think it was like $400 or $500 to have it assembled, but pay to have things assembled. Like you get a barbecue or something, just pay to have it assembled.
That's rich dad, poor dad. Pace others to do everything you don't want to do. Is that what I can't remember what it is? Something like that.
I think he's a MAGA guy now.
Oh, so. Really?
He's a friend of Donald Trump, I think. He's been a longtime friend. Oh, that's
why. What a shock. Foot in my mouth here. Jeez.
Shame on you, Adam. How can people find out more about what you're doing, Brendan?
You can go to our website, bcra.bc.ca, click economics. All of our stuff is up there. You can follow me on LinkedIn. I'll post there when it's not driving me nuts. And I think I'm on Blue Sky, but I only post about like Seattle sports and like bench press progress on Blue Sky, because I don't really take that seriously.
PRs and home runs, RBIs and PRs. That's what you should be.
Exactly.
Well, thanks. Thanks so much for your time, as always.
You bet. It was a blast.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Brendan Augmentson, chief economist over at the BC or British Columbia Real Estate Association. And it's always a great conversation.
Yeah, it's funny. He does the show for the Live Wire, but I think a lot of people tune in for the Live Wire. He's always got good recommendations. I'll be listening to the Vancouver band what are they called? Watermark? I just
Watermark.
No.
No.
Hang on. It's something
Let
else.
See. Yeah, I consult my notes.
Water margin. Water margin.
Water margin. Yes. We have to both consult our notes. Where else can you get the most exciting and kind of insightful takes on the Vancouver real estate market and also have references to George Plimpton?
Yeah. Only on our show. Matt, what else do we got before we cut for the day?
What else do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the Livewire. You would have saw those stats before the quiz question had you been on the Livewire. We also have, of course, I should say what else you get. You get stats, different types of stats, sales ratios, where you can dig into different price bands and different property types, get deal of the month, a host of other things with the Livewire. We also have, of course, tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us and set up your own free account. This is absolutely the best way to be monitoring real estate listings in the province, really. I think a lot of our listeners already have accounts. If you don't have your own free account, set it up, because what a time to be watching listings.
There's no reason why you shouldn't take advantage of private client services. That's for sure. It's all at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. What else do we have, Adam? I'd say that's it for the day. We should ring the bell here on the New York Stock Exchange. The fall market has begun. Exciting times. If you want to talk about that or anything else, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Yeah, or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Excellent. Well, have a great week, everyone. And we're back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.